Cheers and welcome to On Tap Brewers, the show that takes you behind the scenes of some of your guys' favorite breweries. Today we're hanging out at Cowichi Creek Brewing, located just outside of Yakima in Cowichi Creek. You can check these guys out on Facebook and Instagram at Cowichi Creek Brewing. Derek, thanks for being on the show, man.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for coming out this afternoon. So you can burn up your Monday to come talk to us.
Hey, no, it's a pleasure of ours. We love doing this type of stuff. Derek, so pretty much how we start the show, as we're in the show too, we'll do a flight of beers as we normally do for people that aren't familiar with the show. And in between questions, we'll talk about a different beer that you have selected. So to start out the show, how about you just kind of give us a broad overview if they've never been here, what your place is like, what do you got to offer?
So we're located in Cowichi, unincorporated Cowichi, not the city. We're on a 45-acre hop and barley farm. It's a farm that we've owned since 2004. We live here about 200 feet from the brewery. We built it here because this is our home and we're able to do things that you can't do in town. So we're located 22 minutes and two turns from downtown Yakima west. Literally just take a ride on Summit View or ride on Thompson Road and you're here from downtown. A little bit what to expect when you come out here. It's very casual. We're farmers. We're not pretentious. And we wanted to have a relaxing environment, not just for the general public, but especially the people in our community, which we're heavily into ag up here. So we wanted to make it friendly for our community primarily. Mm-hmm. We're a park light setting. We're kid and dog friendly. Dogs on leashes, of course. We are a food facility in Yakima County, so no animals in the building. Always welcome to have families out here. We have more kids' birthday parties than adults' birthday parties out here. They love to come out and throw rocks in the creek and play with our dog. And it's just a relaxed, laid-back place to come chill and have a hop for beer or Washington-made cider.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a huge property. And there is farming around, which we'll kind of get into that a little bit later in the show. How many beers do you have on tap typically?
We currently have 7. It will go up to in the 12-13 mark during fresh hop. It kind of dwindles down in the wintertime. We try to keep it to the winter style beers. But we have our 4 flagships that we run year round, and then all the seasonals and rotationals come in and go as the year goes on.
Cool. And you brew on site. You talk just a little bit briefly about kind of the what you have.
We learned a lesson from a few brewers out there, Boneyard Brewing, Bailbreaker Brewing, a couple other breweries that we had talked to before we got started. And they talked about scaling recipes and what it means to have a pilot system and a production main system. And so we used Sabco Brew Magics as a template, and we had built a clone of that, but it changed some things that improved the design. So that home-built pilot system, what we built most of our, you know, 3 of the 4 recipes here and a lot of the recipes that we carry here throughout the year was built on this little tiny homebrew system. And so we designed our production system to be just a bigger version of it. So we built it ourselves. It was we had metal benders or MBI Construction in town roll the steel, but besides that, the rest of it was built by us. So it was all by design that we knew how the beers were coming out on the small system. We wanted them to come out very similar on the big system.
Very cool.
When we built it, I did the BTU calcs and the engineering on it, and everything said that I could boil 700 gallons of water, but we didn't know if we physically could. Mm-hmm. So when we did the first water batch and the 700 gallons boiled, we knew that at least that was the big hurdle out of the way. We used some special fermenters that were kind of crafted after Full Sail fermenters, the same geometry we tried to match what they did. Mm. We used 3 20-barrel fermenters in the back, and then we have these 260s right behind us that we can triple batch into.
Gotcha.
For the most part, all of our other beer goes into the small tanks. These 2 big ones, for the most part, brew just Farmer Way. That's our flagship. We do more of that beer than anything. And that's what these tanks are designed for.
Cool. Yeah, so Farmer Way, just kind of looking at your tap room, you have like wood and stuff. What other kind of elements would you say that kind of lends itself to that Farmer Way mindset?
Yeah, you know, when we got our glycol chiller in, it came wrapped in plastic and 1x6 and 1x4 pine. And when we got it in here, I set it off the back of the pickup and I go, man, this wood's pristine. Like, I think we can use it for something in the future. So I took a mallet and beat the pallet all apart and piled the lumber back up in the old building. And then we needed bar stools and chairs for the brewery. And we had noticed down at Cowichi Canyon Kitchen in the restaurant section, they had these really cool tube frame wood paneled chairs. And I went in there and I talked to the owner's father about them. And he had said, you know, hey, there's this LA furniture designer that builds these things. And they were really expensive. And so I thought, you know, hey, I think we can build these ourselves. And so we got the prototype done. And I said, oh, by the way, we need a bunch of wood. And what was sitting out back was a bunch of 1x4 and 1x6 wood. So all the chairs we hand built ourselves, the tables, mm-hmm. the bar. I mean, this building, I built the building.
Yeah, you're handy. You were saying you did the whole place.
I mean, farmers are that way. You know, yeah. we you could hire it out or you could figure out how to do it yourself. And I grew up in a very rural town where you didn't have people to call on. You couldn't get somebody out there. And if they could, it's a big service charge to get them out there. And so just from growing up, we always learned that if you want something done, most time you have to rely on yourselves. It's not like you can call somebody. So, and plus it saves a ton of money and it's also really fun to learn. And one thing that it's kind of done for us is that we understand everything from the building all the way to the end of the beer. We understand the farming and the agronomy of the crops all the way to the beer. And the more you can understand about every process that goes into either the beer or the customer's experience or the functioning of the building, we believe that and the end result is a better product.
Awesome. Cool. Cool. So that was just an overview. Let's do the first beer on the flight that you picked out for
All
us.
All right. What so this got? First beer is, we call it Fickle Blonde. Mm-hmm. The reason it's called Fickle Blonde was because it started out with a certain aroma hop variety and we couldn't get it on our contracts. And we knew beer has to be consistent and we knew that we would eventually change that hop. Mm-hmm. So we named it Fickle Blonde because we were going to change the recipe 1 year after we had released it. And it was just supposed to be a seasonal crossover beer. You know, I went to WSU. I was a Keystone Coors Light guy. Mm-hmm. And when I met my wife, she got me onto IPAs. And this was a beer that was like a compromise between her style and my style. It was a very light, dry, but still dry hop to give you flavors of the Yakima Valley. We use Citra in it now for aroma. But when we formulated the recipe, we used Amarillo. Amarillo is the one we couldn't get contracted, so we subbed in Citra, which is very tropical, fruity,
mm-hmm, yeah.
But very light. It was supposed to be when somebody comes in and says, "Don't give me anything hoppy," and you say, "Well, this is our least hoppy beer, but it is dry hopped with Citra, so you're gonna get that taste of Yakima in that beer."
Right.
And so we were supposed to just brew it, you know, during the summer months as a warm month beer. And it turned out to be our, you know, second, third seller, best seller out of the, depending on the time of year. And so we literally have not stopped brewing it since we started. In fact, we just ran out of it and we're 10 days with no Fickle Blonde during the summer. Thankfully, we have some other lighter beers to kind of fill the void, but
cool.
It just started out as this beer that was supposed to be, you know, a crossover for the Coors Light drinkers. And it turned out to be one of our more popular beers.
Awesome, yeah. And was this one that, I mean, you started out with it, so this was a homebrew kind of recipe at first?
Yeah, this was the third recipe that we had created. We created Farmer Way IPA, then we created Tickle Me Aldo Pale Ale, and then we created this recipe, because it was, everybody was asking us for something lighter, and we obviously like the hops, and so we created this as like a compromise. So it's, but we call it a crossover beer, because it's that, trying to get that light lager drinker, that Bud Miller Coors drinker, into the craft segment,
right.
And say, hey, it doesn't have to be scary. My first beers as a craft beer drinker were Red Hook ESB, Mac and Jack's African Amber, and you know some of the more pungent beers from Rock Bottom. Mm. You know, and they're very like not approachable beers. A Red Hook ESB is, I mean, it's like the Keystone Light commercial with the bitter beer face and the puckered, puckered up face, uh-huh. And it was just, if I would have had this beer, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been into craft beer much quicker.
No, that's awesome.
But that was my beer, was for people like me.
Mm-hmm. So an easy one to kind of get into
craft
beer,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. And we're not trying to grab Red Hook customers or, you know, we're trying to say to the people that are the Bud Miller Coors, like, hey, we can make light beer and still make it tasteful.
Cool. So kind of, you know, talking, you know, homebrew recipes and going into homebrew, kind of what's your brewing process here? Everybody cooks the same way, but.
Yeah. So we learned from our very first recipe, we got a recipe off the internet and they called it an IPA and it wasn't, it was a brown ale. They didn't dry hop it. It had no hop character. It was all malt. And we just knew at that point, we started in food and we're pretty good cooks. And we understood that, you know, recipes on the internet are usually, that's what they are. They're just simply something that somebody scrapped together, called it authentic, and slapped it up there to get some clicks on some advertisement.
Right, right.
We understood back then that you have to understand the ingredients. If you don't know what paprika tastes like on its own, you don't know what it's going to taste like as a burger spice. And so same thing with our beers is we read the brewing books and we read what people were saying online and in the chat rooms but what we came up to is that not a lot of people really know what they're doing, and they don't know how to make the beer that we want. So, and everything's, you know, it's subjective. What's light and dry to you may not be light and dry to me. So we started breaking some rules on what the brewing books told us. They told us not to mash below 152 degrees. We mash it in the 148 range for a lot of our beers. They told us to use, 15 to 20% specialty malts. We're in the 5% range. We do things, they say dry hop at 1 pound of the barrel. We're the 3 to 4 pounds to the barrel in dry hopping in some of our beers. We just kind of used a scientific process and just said, okay, if we do this much, what if we doubled it? What if we, tripled it? And then we know where we got to where we actually started liking it. Right.
When you were breaking those quote unquote rules of brewing, what was that like to do that? Were you doing that on this scale? Were you doing that at home?
Still on the small scale, at 12 gallons at a time. And we would brew, I started home brewing as most people start home brewing like they do one batch on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I was doing 3 batches on Saturday, 4 batches on Sunday, usually sneaking one in on Wednesday. And so that I would have 6, 7, 8 beers side by side, and we could do panels on, they were single hop beers that we split off in half and used, dry hopped half and not the other half. So we had literally 8 beers times 2, and we had 16 beers, and we could taste what the hot side of the character hop was versus the cold side with dry hopping. And then we started blending it together doing that, cramming that much beer out in the same time where you can taste them side by side. And then you can go back the next day after you ate something different. Maybe you had something spicy the day before, or maybe you didn't eat much or whatever. Mm. Then we go through and do it again, and we'd start from the other end and work ourselves this way. And so just having that a large quantity of multiple beers available really helped us do recipe formulation, understand what our processes were doing. We did kind of like what Jason Peralt does down at Yakima Chief Ranches, and he brews one beer over and over and over. The only thing he changes is the hop. Mm. And that way he knows from beer to beer that one changes. So that's what we did. We would make one change per a batch. It took a long time to get to a finished product, but I know now what if you change this number by this much, this is what the end result is going to be. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the people will say, hey, do this, change that. And by the time you get 3 changes in, you're not going to know what one did to the finished product.
Yeah. So you guys kind of have a long brewing day, about 9 hours when we were hanging out with you, filming with you guys. Can you kind of talk about that? You also use like a forklift to get your guys' grain up on the brew deck and stuff like that.
We definitely, as small as we are, we can't afford to lose a batch. So we have to be slow with certain steps of the brewing process. We can't speed it up. We do things unconventionally here. I'm the owner, and I'm here for pretty much every brew day, especially mash-in. So we don't have a grist case. We don't have a cable bay conveyor. We take a forklift. We throw all of our grain into the grist, into garbage cans that we use just for mashing in. Mm-hmm. And we raise it up and do it. It's simply, we built the whole building ourselves. And as we progress, we'll fix like one thing, like, okay, now we don't have to do it this way. And then we, we put in some scaffolding and some a catwalk so we could dry hop the fermenters without a ladder. But we started with literally everything here was a forklift and some sort of platform or bin or pallet or something to raise us up to do all the tests here. So
yeah, wow.
So it's and just like go back to the construction of the building. It's we do things like out of necessity, much like farmers do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the motif around here.
Yeah, when we got in here early when you guys were starting and you were going through the grain. And it was kind of like a home brewer setup.
Yeah,
and you were
yeah.
saying how long the drill and everything lasted you.
Yeah, I mean they said you would get so many gallons of beer or so many pounds of grain through this mill before it would basically be no good. And I think we measure it by tons of grain that we went through this thing. We should become a spokesperson for that company. But we just use a small 3-rower mill. Mm-hmm. We actually get better efficiencies now in our grain than we did when we first started. It just seems as the mill's kind of worn down a little bit, we actually get better extraction of sugars in our mash tun and also slowing things down and and letting things kind of run their course. Mm-hmm. Don't hurry things. The first time we brewed a batch of beer here, we did the water batch, and then we did a 7-barrel batch. And we just threw the heat to it, and we ended up scorching the wort. And mm-hmm. we learned that first batch that don't rush things. It's not worth it.
Just right.
let things go as slow and as safe as possible.
Totally. Cool. Let's go to the next beer on the
All right, the next one, this is a seasonal, actually. Mm-hmm. It's called Golden Soda. It was just purely because a friend of mine in college used to call him Golden Soda. Like, hey, I'm going to go have a Golden Soda. You want to come with me? It was just a term he had used to describe beer. And I Googled it when we came out this beer, and I would kind of, it's one of our lighter beers, which is in his ballpark. Mm-hmm.
Certainly lighter than the first one.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's a Pilsner. Mm-hmm. And so I Googled it, and to my luck, it hadn't been used yet. And so we called it Golden Soda. But it started out as a single hop beer last fall that we did for Hollenberry and Sons. And then it was a collaboration with them. And then I knew after we brewed it, I said, these are the things I changed to make it mine. And so when we first used cashmere hops, which is the predominant hop in this, we tasted it. I mean, it was straight out of like a fresh cut strawberry field. Even the vegetative character of it came out. It reminded me of, we used to pick strawberries for one of our neighboring farmers as kids before we could drive tractor and stuff. And mm-hmm. I could smell it, and it smelled like what my hands smelled like after picking strawberries all day. But I also knew that it was kind of one note. It was just strawberries. And so we threw a bunch of Centennial into it too, which tastes like lemons and almost like lemon drops, or, you know, like almost that artificial lemon flavor. It's lemons. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically like our version of strawberry lemonade, but hop addition in a Pilsner. Mm-hmm. It is dry hop, so it does have more hop character and flavor in it. But it has that lighter body of a Pilsner. Some of that biscuity malt will come through on it a little bit, but the whole point was to taste the strawberries and the lemons.
Yeah, we were talking when you were brewing, and you were saying like, I don't like putting fruit and stuff. You should be able to get that with the proper ingredients.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think so, that kind of depicts
one of that. Like when we go back to those single hop beers that we did, we had mixed a beer that was dry hopped with Amarillo and Citra at a 50-50%. And it tasted just exactly like those yellow rings in Fruit Loops. Mm-hmm. And we know that Ballast Point does a Fruit Loop beer every year where they go and clean out Costco of all their Kirkland signature Fruit Loops, whatever they call them.
Right.
And I was like, you don't need to get Fruit Loops from Costco to get Fruit Loop flavor in beer. We can do it with hops. And so, you know, then I started going through and, you know, some of them taste like stone fruit. Some of them taste obviously like strawberries. Some of them taste like tropical fruit, pineapple. You know, all the flavors that you can put in with fruit, you can pretty much get them from hops. There's some that you can't, but a lot of the fruity flavors you can.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Green apple, pear, apricot, you know, there's hops that taste like all of those things.
And you guys kind of refuse to put
fruit in there. We used to have a rule that said no fruit in our beer. But last year for Taco Fest, we developed a michelada recipe. Mm. And so obviously it has jalapenos and tomatoes in it, which are both in the fruit category. Mm-hmm. So we started breaking our rules. And then later that year, we did a blueberry-infused beer with fresh pressed blueberries and in tiny dogs. So it was. So we've started putting fruit in our beer now.
Gotcha.
Since then.
Cool.
But for that first you know, year and a half or so, it was strictly just hops to get those flavors out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you were saying that you guys were cooks or chefs kind of before.
Yeah,
before
we started in the food business, in a mobile food business.
Right. And you do a lot of food events here. So you do like Burger Jam just happened.
Yeah.
And I guess Taco Fest.
Yeah, Taco Fest is downtown, but but that was how kind of this whole Burger Jam started. Was we had served at a tour of homes, chefs on tour with the Fat Pastor. Mm-hmm. And then we had served at Taco Fest with them, and then they came out here and we started talking burgers. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the incubation of that whole event, because we did a couple burger nights here with these over the top world championship burgers they had competed with. So we are food people.
Mm-hmm. You can see I was on your guys' Instagram, and it seemed like every other photo was either a beer or a burger.
So we try to have, like, you know, every once in a while we try to bring in these not just a regular food truck that's just serving tacos, but something that's above and beyond.
Yeah.
We're all the way out here in Kelechi, you know, when you come out here, we want to have the best of what we can offer. A lot of people have said, oh, you need to just do hot dogs. And I go, you know, I don't know that I'm happy with just hot dogs. I think if we can put the extra effort forward and bring something better, we should do it. We shouldn't say it's just good enough. I don't brew a beer and say, oh, it's good enough, let's put it for sale. You know, if it's not good, it goes down the drain.
Right.
You know, so that's, That's and knowing the food side and also starting out as a mobile food vendor, I know a lot what these guys go through, and they work extra hard for not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They're usually, you know, slaving away in hot temperatures. It's the busiest time of the year. Mm-hmm. They're in these trucks, they're in these tents, dealing with weather. You know, my heart goes out to them. I know because I did it, that it's one of the hardest jobs, hard as farming is, you know, with getting demoralized with crop production and things that can happen during, whether it be labor shortages or pest and disease pressure, mm-hmm. and, you know, poor harvest or poor market prices. Those guys go through the same thing. Mm-hmm. So they bust their butts to come out here on Saturday and serve everybody food. And it's just a ton of work, and it's definitely a labor of love and a passion they have for food and creating smiles on people's faces with food. So it goes hand in hand. We do rotate trucks through here, vendors through here, most every Friday and Saturday. Some weekends we don't have people because of the scheduling, but for the most part, that's what we do on weekends. We do have some stuff in the works that's going to make it so we do have permanent food here, hopefully, in the near future. Yeah. But that's still under development.
Yeah, getting under the works. Cool. So you guys, obviously farmers way. You got some crops actually on your guys' property. You want to talk a little about kind of what you're doing with that?
Yeah. So when I met my wife and she introduced me to Hot Bay Beers, she's the one that told me about, you know, these things can taste like tropical fruit and lemons and pine and all that stuff. And I just got super fascinated with it. So we started growing hops actually. Mm-hmm. And we were making cider at that time, but we hadn't even got into the beer side of things, and we were already starting with the hops. And so one thing we learned in that first fresh hop year as homebrewers is that we can't get sometimes the varieties we want on the schedule we want to brew the beer. Mm-hmm. So our fresh hop schedule revolves around Fresh Hop Ale Festival. So this year it's pushed back 1 week. It's October 5th. We back up 21 days from that day because that's how much time it takes to make beer. Mm-hmm. And then we harvest our own hops because we want a piney hop, which is Chinook, and we want a citrusy hop or a lemony hop, which is Centennial. So we have half of our field is Centennial, half of it is Chinook, and we know 21 days before fresh hop, we're going to be harvesting those hops. Centennial is an earlier variety in the lower valley, but because we're less heat units up here, we can push it out a little bit farther. Mm. So it's got a little bit later harvest date up here. So it's purely, we grow these just for a fresh hop beer. I grow all the hops for a beer we call Mount Clemens, which is a remake of an apple label from my dad's apple farm. And it used to be called Mount Clemens Apples. Now it's called Mount Clemens Fresh Hop Pale Ale. Mm. And then my wife works for a large hop farm in the Lower Valley. And we repurposed one of her dad's onion labels, which was Grown For You Onions. And that's now called Grown For You Fresh Hop IPA.
Oh, that's cool.
And she grows the hops for that down in the Lower Valley. So they get to grow proprietary varieties down there. So her beer, I think, is better than mine. And plus, it's an IPA, not a pale. Mm-hmm. But that's just, you know, she's a commercial farmer. So
yeah, totally. Big scale.
Yeah.
How much acreage do you have or land do you have to?
So we have 45 acres here, about 30 of it's farmable, 20 of it's in barley, and up until recently, about 1.5 acres of hops.
Very cool.
So, and we don't twine at all because we don't need that many. Acre and a half of hops produces about 3,000 pounds of netted dry hops. We don't dry our hops here. We don't have a kiln. Mm-hmm. We don't bale them. It's all just for fresh hops. So we just twine enough to get that one fresh hop beer done to be harvested 21 days before fresh hop.
Yeah. So your fresh hop beer is slightly different because it's grown on your guys' brewing property and it's all you guys.
Yeah. And then we also do, so that's two of the fresh hops. And we also do three other beers. And we go down to the airport and grab, in years previous, it's been Amarillo, but they just started growing Citra down by the airport in Yakima. So that's one growing region. Mm-hmm. We go down to, obviously, Toppenish and grab hops from Shampoos, Gamaches, Peralts, my wife's farm, Green Acre. And then also we'll go to Moxie, we'll grab some whatever Eric Demery's picking over it at CLS, and then we'll go up to Mike McGree's out in Sela and grab something out of there, and we'll build a beer around every growing region and have five fresh hop beers. Basically, it's like a tour de Yakima Valley and so that you can have hops grown from every region.
Very cool. Is it hard picking from all those for the Fresh Hop Festival?
Yeah, you know, like I said, we know those dates, and so I'll call them when we get closer, ready to start dry hopping some beer or wet hopping beer, and I'll start sending some text messages out and say, hey, what are you guys picking this week? You know, what is looking good? And
right. And
they'll go, yeah, you know, we're tearing into this field of Chinook that looks pretty good on Tuesday, and so we'll peel some beer out on Tuesday and wet hop or dry hop with wet hops, that beer with that one, and that'll be the Ween Ass beer or Ween Ass Hop Company. And it would just kind of go, just play it by ear, and I can kind of just know by what people are harvesting. I'm like, well, I can mix this hop from this guy and this hop from this guy and get that. You know?
Yeah.
It's just totally, it's always fresh hop and hop harvest is always a seat of your pants.
Yeah.
It changes every year, you know, so it's just basically, I get what they're picking, and then we just kind of pick and choose where to go from there.
Very cool. Yeah, it's awesome. You do five, so it's like a tour of Yakima's hop country, basically.
Yeah, it's unique. You know, I went to school with some of these guys. We're friends with them. Mm-hmm. You know, either we have good relationships with them. You know, not being in Yakima, not having those relationships, it's pretty hard to do that, what we do. But because we do, we have great relationships with so many growers, is we can really go through and pick and choose and find the best of what our valley has to offer during harvest.
Cool. Well, you grow another hop, and you kind of said that, but let's do the next beer on the flight, and then we'll kind of get into the barley that you guys do here.
So the next one is Tiny Dog.
Mm-hmm. Tiny Dog.
It's our Session IPA, and it's named after our dog. When we got our brewery beast, her name was Jordan. She was a run of a litter. She got sent to this family out in town, and when she outgrew the puppy stage, the kids just kind of got bored with her, and she stayed all day in the kennel. And they felt bad about it, so they gave her back to the brewery or to the breeder, and the breeder knew that we needed a dog, and so we got her for free, gave it to us, and she was, you know, she didn't know her own name. She's jumping up over the picnic tables, running through the creek, you know. She's just kind of out of control, and I just told my wife, I'm like, we got to train this dog because we can't have her around the public if she's like this, and I don't want to put her in a kennel or chain her up. So my wife started working with her, and not long after we got her, she started, you know, calling her Jordan, and I said, babe, we got to rename that dog. Jordan is for a runt female dog. It's just a horrible name. She goes, what do you want to call her? She's such a tiny dog. And I go, let's call her Tiny Dog. Mm-hmm. So fast forward, this brewery was built on Field 41, which is, you know, technically a Session IPA. It's my wife and I's favorite style, and it's the one style that we didn't have. We didn't brew that beer, didn't create a recipe. So I looked at different recipes for different Session IPAs, and some of them were kind of close, but I didn't like a lot of, like, one thing out of each beer. It was like, I don't like that. I would do this differently. And so we created a beer that was how we liked it. Simcoe heavy. Heavy in that citrus and pine character. I love Simcoe. It's our brewery's Simcoe heavy here. Anyways, I wrote down a recipe. It's the first time I've done this with no testing. We just went with it. 20 barrels, $4,000 in raw materials, and brewed this beer. And not long, you know, 3 months after we had opened, it was done. And my wife came in one day, and she's, you know, not real happy with anything to do with the brewery because she hasn't had a husband in three years. But right. While we built it. She sat down and asked me how my day was. I'm like, pretty good. You want to try the Session? She's like, yeah, I guess. So I sat in front of her, and she smelled it, and her eyes got big, and she smiled, and she took a drink of it, and she even smelled bigger, and she goes, it's delicious. What are you going to call it? And I go, it just hit me in a split second. I go, you know, big beers are high alcohol. Smaller, tiny beers are low alcohol. It's the lowest alcohol beer we make, 4.2%. And I'm like, I'll name it after her dog. And I'm like, I'm thinking about calling it Tiny Dog. And then she smiled even bigger, and it's like the one day I win as a husband in this entire, you know, 3.5 brewery project was naming that beer. And still today, it's, you know, for especially during the summertime, we call it our heavy machinery beer because you can have a few and still operate heavy machinery. It's our get work done beer. So if we're going to go out and work on landscaping or something outside, it's that's what we drink.
Very cool. And that's 41 from Bellbreaker.
Field 41 is
for people that aren't from around.
Was the Field 41 from Bellbreaker? Mm-hmm. Was the inspiration behind that? And I think we went through, I don't know, 9 or 10 half barrels during construction here. This building, my house was built on Keystone Light before I met my wife. This place was definitely built on Field 41.
That's awesome. Cool. So Tiny Dog running around. We got footage of him out there in the barley and
whatnot.
Yeah,
she loves. She's a farm dog now. She went from being a city dog to a farm dog, and she one of the things that she loves is when I get on my little water change and irrigating bike, is as soon as it starts up, her ears perk up, and she's like, "Okay, time to go to work, Dad."
Yeah.
So she loves going out and chasing mice in the field and swimming through the barley.
Yeah.
And then she has her other job, which is keeping kids and public entertained when they're here. So when the pickup starts up, she knows that I'm coming down to work here. She'll grab one of her balls and she just sits there and she's like, "Okay, Dad, ready to go to work. Let's
right.
go."
Yeah.
You know? And so she's been what was thought to be kind of a terror when she first got let out of the car and started, you know, she's running over picnic tables. You can imagine what would happen if your dog, you know, have a birthday party with birthday cake and glasses on the on the picnic tables. If this wet black lab comes mowing through somebody's party, it would be a disaster.
Yeah.
Now, thanks to my wife working with her so much, she's very well trained and she loves the public, especially kids.
That's awesome. So we sat down with Single Hill and they kind of talked about their citizen grain and how that was kind of them taking a shot at kind of doing their own grain and whatnot. So what's it like to be able to do your own grain on property? How long have you been trying?
Yeah, so this is our second year. We're getting pretty close to harvesting it for that. We're basically figuring things out. And so just like the beer, you can't just go to the internet and get a recipe for it. Mm-hmm. It's going to take, it takes multiple years to learn a crop. So, you know, I didn't get good at growing alfalfa until probably, and I grew it since I was, you know, 15 years old. It took me 7 or 8 years to learn all of the things that can happen, whether it be weather-wise or market-wise or, you know, stages of the crop, the life cycle of it. So we're in our second year. We're still quite a ways away from producing a grain that's on par with what, you know, what Montana or British Columbia or the Palouse is cranking out. We're irrigated here, so it messes with the protein content of it. We don't want a lot of protein in our malt, so we're still messing with it right now. So
you're doing still, 2-row.
So we're doing American 2-row, which is the base malt for most of our beers. 90, probably pretty close to 94-95% of all the barley we go through here is American 2-row. We used to use some pale, but now it's all American 2-row. And so that's obviously the grain we're trying to grow.
Yeah.
But still work in progress. We'll see how this year comes out.
So when you nail it, what does that mean for you guys?
Well, the thing is we have 20 acres of it, so that's enough to grow pretty much at our current production capacity. That's enough to brew basically 2.5 years worth of beer here. So So there's a lot of and that's actually as expensive as hops are right now. We're paying our biggest raw material is grain, actually.
Yeah, I mean, in the batch that we were filming you, I think it was what, 5. Garbage bag or cans of it.
Yeah, that was blonde, so roughly around 1,200 pounds of it. 60 bushels, so 60 pounds to the bushel. So, it's definitely something that we're trying to, just like everything else we've done here with vertical integration, is something we're trying. So,
yeah,
but it's definitely going to take us a while to get to the point where we're good at every step.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What's the last beer on the flight?
So the last beer on our flight is Farmer Way. It's our flagship IPA. We brew more, like I said, we brew more of this beer than anything. Mm-hmm. Like Tiny Dog, it's a Simcoe heavy beer. We do use some Mosaic, which is a daughter of Simcoe, in the dry hopping profile. And when we did these single hop beers, the two beers that were just like the beers you couldn't set down. You had a sip, and then the aftertaste would hit you. And you're like, wow, that is delicious. I want another sip. And it was literally the beers that it was hitting your palate, and you're just like, it was so amazing the flavors that were coming off of those two beers was the Simcoe single hop and the Mosaic single hop. And the difference between the Simcoe and the Mosaic hop was the Simcoe one, you could taste it, and you're like, oh yeah, I get pine and citrus out of this. No problem. The Mosaic one was you take a sip, and you're like, oh yeah, I get a little tropical fruit. And by the time you said, yeah, you'd already finished the tropical fruit, and then maybe some pine hit you, and you're like, oh, wait, there's some pine in there too. And then as soon as you said, oh, wait, then another flavor hits you, and like, oh, there's like citrus and some stuff in the back that's coming through. And it was literally like the stained glass window of hops. And Mosaic is such a great name for that hop because it's a kaleidoscope of flavors.
Yeah.
And it's like a storyboard, and it doesn't hit you one note, and it's like it hits you at front, middle, and end of every drink. And so that was, I just fell in love with that beer. And I was like, it's the one, it's, yeah, I can like name certain flavors I get out of it, but I can't say that that hop is like, it's tropical fruit or it's pine or it's citrus. It's just, it was all over the board, but everything that you tasted was extremely pleasant. And it was that one to like, it was an experience where you went through it and you're like, whoa, 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 what was that? Mm-hmm. And then you would go, I want to try that again. And you just, you know, you'd take a sip and then it hit you again. And so, and because it's a daughter of Simcoe, they play well together. And so those are the two predominant hops. There's a little bit of Equinaut, Warrior, some other things into it. But
that's like your, that's your flagship.
Yeah, but that's our flagship. This is it. We went through, I think, 54 batches of this recipe as a home brewer before we got it to where we liked it. And it started as these single hop beers. So we brewed basically Farmer Way as a single hop times 27. Mm-hmm. And then we split the batches out in half. So now you're up to, you know, 54 beers that we have brewed. 27 batches, 54 beers. Mm-hmm. And then we started messing with, once we got the hops figured out, we figured out the ratios of how we like the hop profile. Then we went on to malt. And that's when we started breaking the rules on specialty malts and percentages and backing the specialty malts down. And we get a little bit of the Maillard character out of a direct-fired brew kettle. So you don't need that caramel malt in there to give it the caramelly taste, because you're going to get that just because of the heat mm-hmm. and the way that the heat transfers through and caramelizes those sugars. And then we went into yeast. And that's really when the beer started to get good. Once we, you know, I read Chris White's book, Yeast. It's probably one of the driest reads you ever had. but having not read that, you would not understand what goes into what yeast brings to the beer and how to actually manage it. And so once we did the yeast trials, and we did, you know, 15 different batches of, you know, doing starters and ramping up the yeast and making sure that we had the yeast pitch quantities, yeast health, the temperature, fermentation temperature, everything mm-hmm. was right. That's when the beer started tasting like commercial examples. And then we went on to water. And luckily, we're on a well, much like Bell Breaker's on a well, Brongniart's on a well. Our well breweries in Yakima are high bicarbonate. The water's very homeostasis. And when you plug it into the brewing calculator, it says good for strong hoppy ales. And you're just like, okay, you know,
match made
what's
in
the
luck?
What's the luck? Yeah. There is some issues with pH because it is a high bicarbonate level. And because it is homeostasis, it wants to stay at a certain pH. We do things like we add acidulated malt and some phosphoric acid, which is basically like Coca-Cola. It buffers the water temp, the pH down. But once we figured out to get that pH, that mash pH down, that's when we were perfectly happy with the beer. And we're like, this is the basis of this brewery.
Yeah.
And that's when we started sending this out to people that were sampling our beers for us, firefighters and family members and things like that. That's when they're like, man, you gotta start brewing more of this. And they started drinking it faster than we can produce it. And then we decided, you know, if we're going to do that, we might as well get licensed mm-hmm. and build a building and everything like that. So that's how, this is the beer that got us to here.
Yeah.
And then these are just, you know, plus the other beers we have are all accents to that.
To that. So, yeah. So, I mean, this kind of started it all. What was it like starting this? I mean, you built everything, you know, what was that process like?
You know, we're located on we're literally in our front yard. That's what started this brewery was, we didn't know if it was going to work, if, you know, if this was going to be a successful business. We couldn't go downtown and lease a building. If we did, we'd put all that money into making it into a brewery. And then if it collapsed, it would, you know, we wouldn't have anything. So mm-hmm. we said, well, we'll build it on site. If it's successful, it's successful. If it's not, we got a pretty cool place to pull tractors in the winter and wash them, you know? And,
yeah.
And by the way, we can brew beer here too. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of stress. We don't have any investors. We this is all financed by my wife and I. Mm-hmm. We didn't have obviously contractors to help us.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty much, we did everything. So, it's still a labor of love, but it's definitely worth it. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most rewarding things you can do, just like farming. It gets busy in the summertime, and then it backs off in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. And literally, you get to see what you produce go from production all the way to market. Just like when we take a load of hay over to the coast, you produce the hay, you cut it, you swath it, you rake it, you bale it, you deliver it, it goes into somebody's barn, and they cut you a check. Mm-hmm. And it's literally, it's the most rewarding type of work you can do, and that you see every step through the way, and then you get rewarded for it.
That's awesome.
And the coolest thing is that we get a lot of smiles with the beer that you don't get. You get some smiles with the egg stuff,
right?
But people's smiles are extra big here.
A little bit more enjoyable to the user or whatever.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, we're out of beers. Derek, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, thanks for checking out the podcast. Really appreciate you guys just kind of checking out our content and supporting us as we continue on with checking out local breweries. We'd really appreciate it if you guys can leave us a review on all podcast apps, on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all those places. You can follow us there on Ontap Brewers. Really appreciate all the support from you guys, and we're excited to keep on going and keep rolling out content for you guys.